Welcome to the Marketing Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Barker, and my guest today is Francis B., the founder and managing director of 11 International. In today's episode, we're going to talk about cross-border marketing and cultural nuances that play a major role in it. Well, cool. You guys, we have Francis B. today on the podcast. Hey, I'm really excited about interviewing today, but you have a I'm excited actually to talk about your background, because your background, you have quite the crazy background of expertise and things that you've done. But why don't we start off? Well, I will tell everybody that you're in Hong Kong right now, correct?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm in Hong Kong.
That's awesome. Awesome. And you go between Hong Kong and New York?
Hong Kong, Beijing, and New York is the best way to put it. Kind of
gotcha.
Bounce around.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Sounds like it. Mr. International Man. That's what I'm kind of excited about chatting with you about. So before we jump into those things, let's talk a little bit about like where you grew up. So where did you grow up? Did you grow up? Give us a little background.
Yeah, so technically born in New York City, and then ended up growing up in Long Island. Later, I actually am technically a dual citizen, so Canadian-American, but my parents are Korean. And then went to school in Wisconsin, and then also high school in Massachusetts, and then have been in Beijing, China, I think starting about 8 years ago or so. And then about a year and a half ago, ended up in Hong Kong.
So how big is your family? Like how big of a family you got?
I mean, we, you know, it's just four people. It's my sister, my father, my mother. My sister's actually back in New York City. She's a nurse there, and she had to deal with the coronavirus. I flew over some masks to her, I believe about like 6 months ago when things started breaking out in the States. That was interesting.
That was crazy. So my wife's a nurse too. So, right. I mean, your sister's a nurse, but the crazy part about that whole thing is I remember there was a point, and I don't know if this is fully confirmed, but I think they offered my wife like some crazy amount of money to come out and be a nurse in New York for the few months when the pandemic was really, really kind of hitting the fan. Right. And the amount was like insane. And I was thinking, man, there was a point of it. And I thought, God, I can't imagine being a nurse in New York right now. I mean, there's a lot of places that were hit hard, but that's awesome. You seem like a good brother, man. You're out there sending out masks to your sister to make sure she was doing good. That's a good thing.
Well, I mean, it's the least I should do.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was the first level of being a good brother. There's probably other levels, but at least having her survive so you can do more good things. Yeah. That's funny. What about any interesting facts growing up, man? Like you, obviously New York, it's kind of interesting. So New York, you have dual citizenship between Canada and the U.S. and then you grew up in Wisconsin. So like, get any interesting facts growing up?
So I actually went to college in Wisconsin, but growing up, to be honest, I was just, you know, it's weird because I ended up in China, and that was a little bit not originally intended. frankly speaking, I probably didn't really know where China was before I ended up there. So, wow. I mean, it's just a typical grown up, you know, I just lived in suburbia and you know, just like with my sister and just, you know, obviously we had a lot of fights when you're growing up. It's typical, nothing out of the ordinary.
Yeah. You have to for sure. And then, and so you went to college in Wisconsin. What did you study in Wisconsin?
I was trying to figure out my life back then. I think it was, I studied English and history. To be honest, I don't think I took anything from that. I did end up later, you know, I started out my career as a journalist for some tech publications back then. I also wrote for like CNET, Digital Trends. These are some tech publications that are sort of more consumer facing. Nothing out of the ordinary, to be honest.
Yeah, but at least it sounds like it did play into currently what you do. And we'll obviously talk about that with the agency you've built in regards to, I think that is a great background to have. You probably at the time you're thinking, right, you know, doing something against writing or anything like that. You're like, what am I going to use this for? And then all of a sudden it kind of started later on, it made a little more sense. I have a lot of people that were like, I got an English lit degree. I don't know why. And then all of a sudden they started doing writing. And then they're like, God, I'm glad that I had that background, you know?
I don't know if I am necessarily glad with that background, but, you know, to be honest, it did kind of get me to where I am. You know, back then I was kind of lost. You know, you're a college student, you're like, oh, what am I doing with my life? am I going to be able to get a job, right? All those questions are passing through your mind, especially senior year. And then, you know, eventually things worked out, but my parents were definitely, you know, they were definitely concerned.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. They're like, what are we going to do with this here, Francis? Come on, buddy. We got to make sure everybody's watching you.
Yeah. Asian parents. Right. So it's like, you know, they want you to become, what is it, like the stereotypical doctor, lawyer or whatever. You know, my father sometimes brings up the lawyer detail. But, you know, yeah. Eventually it turned out okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, most, and Asian parents definitely, but, you know, I think all parents are kind of like, you know, especially in college, because it's so hard, man. You're like, what am I going to do? Even when I get my degree, am I going to get a job? You know, I don't want to disappoint anybody. There's a lot of pressure there. You know, I think that happens. A lot of people don't realize, but definitely in an Asian family. I have some of my really good friends are Asian, and I'll tell you, that's a different deal. They're like, listen, you need to be successful because everybody's watching you. And if you don't, it's going to be really awkward at Christmas time. Right. It's like, hey, you got to make it happen. Yeah. But you turned out right. But I mean, here you are on my podcast. Like, this life is good, man. You're doing good, bud.
Oh, thanks.
So tell me about, what was your first job out of college, actually?
First job out of college. So I was actually working briefly as an intern doing PR in New York City. And then eventually I ended up sort of mostly full time. Working as sort of a writer at Digital Trends. And, you know, it's great because when you're a journalist or a blogger, whatever you want to call it, you get access that you didn't have before. You know, you get to talk to a lot of CEOs, you get to talk to a lot of, you know, executives about their companies, and then eventually you build some rapport. And for me as a, you know, fresh grad, right? I'm starting out fresh. I frankly speaking, professionally know no one. So that kind of gives you that like launching point or launch pad for you to kind of launch your career and build those relationships that eventually help you to, you know, move to the next level. And frankly speaking, eventually that was like one of the reasons why I ended up with my first job in China as well, which, you know, originally I didn't intend to go there. So I was kind of like, you know, running around with my head cut off to some degree, or a chicken running around with the head cut off. But, you know, one of my editors that I was working with back then at one of the publications called The Next Web, he actually introduced me to the first opportunity, which was a content marketing opportunity. So, yeah, I guess, you know, all in all, at the end of the day, the English degree did technically help.
Yeah, it was the foundation.
Yeah, foundation. Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it brought you where you're at today. I, you know, it's so funny when people talk about like people's journeys. And I think that, you know, we always think, oh, what if I would have done this or what if I would have done that? But it's like your journey that you're taking today literally has to do, well, your degree in English obviously pushed you to meeting these people, writing great pieces, and then turned into a job in China. And now you have an agency, your 11th, 11 International, right, that you run. I want to talk a little bit about that because it's so funny. Like people can't see you. I mean, obviously I can see you because I've got you on video as well. You look like a young guy, man, but yet you've got some, you're talking about 8 years here and doing this and doing that. Tell us a little bit about 11 International and how you started the company. Like how did that, I'm interested to hear that transition.
Yeah. So actually, I used to work at a drone company. I was a general manager and head of marketing over there. And you know, I've been working internally at various startups, tech companies for some time. And then eventually, you know, you put your life's work into that and you feel great about it. And, you know, when it comes to things like stock options and the things that eventually everybody wants out of that experience sometimes can be a disappointment. And so, you know, after years of that, and burnout at the same time, I just felt that, you know, I just wanted to kind of branch off on my own, and, you know, give it a shot. So actually it kind of technically started a little bit accidentally. In the beginning, you know, people had heard that I would be leaving that company. And what ended up happening is that I had a couple of folks that reached out. Actually, my first client, they're called Castbox. I'm pretty sure you might be familiar with them. Maybe
yeah,
not.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, so they're the podcast company. So back then, actually, nobody was familiar with them. The CEO was struggling a little bit to try to figure out a way to promote that company. And, you know, they had sort of made attempts. So, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I'll give this a shot. I know you guys need help. And, you know, she was CEO was somewhat of a friend of mine as well. So yeah, I mean, I sort of worked with them internally for a little bit, kind of helped build the brand, and then at the same time helped them, you know, especially on the PR side, and kind of helped her think through the best approach to be able to build, you know, the brand that, you know, podcast has right now, which I'm proud of, I guess, to some degree, because, you know, it is a popular sort of international app, but in back then, you know, I was working out of Beijing with them, which is where they're based as well. And obviously I think now they might have a San Francisco office, but yeah, I mean, it kind of started off there. And frankly speaking, a lot of the companies that kind of work with me, have a very similar story. They might've tried things, or they, you know, heard about the work that we've done. And they have a lot to lose because obviously there are a lot of, you know, pressures from the investors that they get, and they want to make sure that they're able to, you know, do the best job. So, and, you know, build a reputation so the investors are happy, CEOs happy, et cetera. So, you know, people do come to us, and that kind of started off 11 International.
And so when we talk about Castbox, when was that? How long ago did you work with them?
I think that was about 3 years ago, actually.
Okay.
So gotcha, when the first announcement for Castbox came out, that was us. Yeah. And the video and everything.
Yeah. Awesome. So this is what I'm talking about. You have a really seasoned background. Like when I was looking at the things you've done, I was like, oh, this is going to be an awesome podcast because you got some cool things that you've done. It's interesting to kind of hear about that. So when you started 11 International, like what, because you talk about being a cross-border digital communication agency. Mm-hmm. So what exactly does that mean?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a lot of nuances when you're working with people that come from different cultures, different backgrounds. And I think what people don't realize when you're communicating across borders is, you know, you have to really account for these nuances. People are like, for example, PR in China is done quite differently, actually. So PR in China, for instance, you can actually pay the journalists to some degree. You can pay them like a little fee. You can also control the messaging. But then when you're kind of translating that experience or the way things are done in China to sort of more of the overseas market, because for us within 11 International, we're actually very much focused on sort of helping companies build their brands, particularly in the US. You know, you have to do some education. You have to know those little details. You also have to understand how the clients that you're working with are used to working. For example, in China, there's something called 996. They're used to working 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. And you'll find that to be pretty common in a lot of tech companies back in like Beijing, for example, or Shenzhen. And so, you know, for us, we have to work with that. So, you know, I've sort of figured out a model that works for myself and my employees, where we're not necessarily, you know, working really 24/7. But we are on call for the clients. You know, sometimes I'll be up at 3 a.m. having to deal with various situations for the clients because maybe they're not asleep as well. You know, it's also when it comes to like messaging, there's like a lot of cultural nuances that you have that you need to be very cautious about or careful about because they're coming from a slightly different mindset. And how they decide to position their product, their brand, may not necessarily as a result, you know, even if it was successful locally, it may not necessarily mean that it will be successful in the States. For us, actually, one of the things that I would say we're quite strong with is being able to help build sort of that message for our clients in a way that truly resonates with the journalists or truly resonates with the end user customers.
And I think that's, man, I can only imagine the challenge, right? I mean, I think people, even in the U.S., with U.S.-based companies have problems with messaging in the U.S., let alone going internationally,
exactly.
Right? So, I mean, you just said, hey, I got an idea. Let's figure out the U.S. thing, and let's go ahead and do China, too. Let's go ahead and put this in the mix. You're like, I mean, that's like, I can only imagine. I remember when I graduated from college, there was a, I think it was one of my instructors was like, hey, take this. It was a class you take on like how to eat internationally and how to like speak and do things. And I remember taking the class. I remember looking and they talked about, hey, don't do this. This is disrespectful. And it was really basic basic in what it was, but I remember it kind of blew my mind because I thought, I was looking around me, I'm like, these people, if anybody does business in another country, they're going to be offensive and they don't understand why they're offensive. And there's just those nuances, like you said, there's those things you don't really understand. And it's important to have that bridge, right? It's important to have somebody to say, listen, that in the US might have done awesome, but here in China, not going to fly, not going to go well. Let me explain why that is.
Right. So like one example is that, you know, I remember back in the day when I was working in house, you know, the way you might position the CEO in the States, you know, everybody loves that sort of rags to riches story, right? Like Apple, you know, Google, Microsoft.
Yeah, start off in a garage. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Yeah. So that you want to build in the States. But on the other hand, like in China, they're used to this image of coming from like, you know, this really well-off background. One that sort of makes them look like they have some, you know, legacy, or makes them look like they come from a great family.
Good foundation.
You know, it's a very different mindset. People want to aspire to that, but then in like Silicon Valley, they want to hear that you started out with like nothing.
Yeah. You right? lived so in your car kind of like, and yeah, exactly. It's that story everybody wants. Yeah, they want to be able to say, oh man, I was close to that too. That's awesome. You made it. And then they can relate that to their life and being able to be successful. Yeah, that's interesting, man. That's interesting because it is, the US is so based on like the underdog, right? The underdog that's like, you know, it's, oh my God, it's like, I just worked all these hours and I only had 6 more cents in my account. And then all of a sudden, you know, and it's like, and they love that. They love that kind of story of, you know, where somebody comes back and is successful. But that's interesting. I could understand in other countries, it's like, well, you know, I don't, why, I mean, who wants to go from being rich to being broke? To being rich. I just want to be rich. Like, I just want to say I have a great family and I have this great foundation and no matter what happens, we're going to be successful because we're this family.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So is there any difference between like a cross-border marketer and an international marketer? Is there like any differentiator there? Because I think, I've never heard cross-border, but it makes total sense when you say that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, the way I think about it and I guess, you know, when we really try to distinguish the two words, you know, they're actually, frankly speaking, at the surface level may not be a huge difference that you recognize, but kind of when you look at it a bit deeper, I think cross-border is more like, you know, being able to account for different nuances between the two regions that you're going from and going to, whereas sort of the international marketers are sort of communicating a single message and trying to have that sort of apply to sort of the rest of the world. Because, you know, like when we work with potential partners, for example, or other agencies, you know, or the we get RFPs, you know, some of these companies, they have very specific requirements to want to be perceived as a global brand. And so we try to build a single message and we kind of have that localized, I think, by the local teams that I would personally consider to be more cross-border marketing teams. Because they are going from, for example, you know, China to India. But, you know, the sort of global message that you're building may not necessarily be 100% applicable. So it has to be localized in some degree.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. So what would be, I mean, I'm just trying to think about this because the cross-border thing, marketer, is when I saw that was like kind of your title, I was like, that's awesome. Like, I really, like, it intrigued me because I am absolutely not. Like, I'm like, you know, for me, I'd be like cross states or something like that, right? Which is really not a thing. Right? California to Nevada, I don't think that's a big thing. But I think internationally, it's a big deal. So what do you think are some of the roadblocks when it comes to like cross-border marketing to watch out for? What are some of the things that you see people wake, the most common things that I think people go and they do and you go, oh, don't do that?
Yeah. You know, talking to clients.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just that, you know, like one of the first things is that when you talk to clients, there's a huge education process. A lot of them are very used to doing things. And obviously, each market is different. But, you know, like when it goes from China, where it really at the end of the day is about money, to the US, where it's more about, you know, money, obviously, but sort of being able to understand that you have to build a brand, there's a very large educational cost for just like, you know, for me as well, in terms of like time and effort, energy that you have to spend and be able to really educate potential clients. You know, when you have meetings, to be honest, sometimes the point of contact just brings you in because they want you to educate the CEO on how, why they shouldn't approach this brand building exercise as, in a way that you would normally find in China, where you just literally pay for the problems to be solved. Obviously, that means that budgets are enormous right now. Like, for instance, that was kind of one of the reasons why a lot of our clients, they may not necessarily focus just on the China market, because actually the China market is a lot more difficult than the US market, which is kind of surprising. Yeah. So, I mean, companies, they have to kind of be able to, be able to sort of align their ducks in a row internally to be able to really equip themselves so they can actually, take on the challenge of expanding their products through branding. And yeah, at the end of the day, CEOs tend to be very focused on, or tend to be knowledgeable, obviously about, running the company. But yeah, at the end of the day, there's quite a bit of education that's needed. And I think that's sort of like one of the major roadblocks that you find, because later down the road, if you misalign expectations, that can be really challenging in being able to make sure that both parties are aligned. Otherwise, there's contractual disputes and things related to payment and things that, at the end of the day, like in China, contracts don't really matter. So at the end of the day, you just have to figure out a way to get the job done. And I think that's also why a lot of companies like to approach us, because we have come from a point of view where we're like, this is how it is. And frankly speaking, we're pretty straightforward, like, actually, with the company. And it would be it, it's actually one of the largest ones in Hong Kong. They have operations in Shenzhen, and they're looking to go into China as well, but they want to build a global brand. But frankly speaking, they've never really invested in, a lot into marketing outside of China, Hong Kong. And so yeah, I've spent like the literally the past like 3 months, I think, with multiple meetings, just essentially just on education for the CEO.
I could only imagine,
So
man.
it's been interesting.
Yeah, because you have to be able to control expectation and what they expect. And you have two totally different cultures and two people that maybe you're thinking of two totally different outcomes, right? So it's like, how
Exactly.
do we? You're almost like mitigation. You're almost like the person in the middle is like, okay, I get what you want. I get what you want. All right, let me tell you what's possible. Okay, now let me tell you why that's not
Yeah.
possible. Now we can do this. It's like you're that, which is absolutely needed, because most people, if you're going to go into another country and start to do business, and you don't have at least some eyeballs and some ears on the ground to better understand how to conduct business, like that's when bad things happen, right? That's when you get into a situation where you're like, well, we
Yeah,
had
I
a
mean,
contract. It's like, what does that mean sometimes internationally?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
the contracts, at the end of the day, when the money lands is when the job is done.
Yeah, right. That's always the deal. I don't care what the contract says. Did you get any cash? You didn't get cash? Well, that's not done yet. How about that? You got to keep going. In marketing, it sometimes feel like ROI takes center stage, and that isn't necessarily a balanced way to look at things. We're going to talk more about that in the next episode of the Marketing Growth Podcast. But before I sign off, I wanted to mention that you can always reach out to my team at shanebarker.com for any guidance related to marketing. My team has a wealth of experience helping brands grow their business. I'll be back soon with another podcast episode. Stay tuned.